I am very privileged to introduce our main speaker, Dr. Michael Perrenny. He is a PhD from Yale, but he talks plain, I hear. Dr. Perrenny's articles have appeared in numerous publications, including Covert Action Quarterly Magazine, New Political Science Monthly Review, The Humanist, Dollars and Cents, The Nation, Los Angeles Times, The New York Times. His commentaries are aired on radio stations, television talk shows, and cable community access stations in the United States, Canada, and abroad. His lectures and talks have been received with great enthusiasm and high interest. His books are available today, and he can autograph them for you. The latest, The Assassination of Julius Caesar, and the next most recent, The Terrorism Trap. His various works have been translated into 15 different languages. He's written 17 books and 250 articles. He's a world traveler who recently spoke in Belgrade, Hanoi, and Brussels, and South Orange, New Jersey, he says. He just told me that he was driving along in the car. He wasn't driving, he was the passenger. And he was holding up his cell phone, and he received a phone call from Radio Tehran. And they were asking him his assessment of the California election. Anyway, he wants to make sure that you know, if you don't know already, about his website, www.michaelperrenny.org. I am very privileged on behalf of the People's Weekly World, because he has not spoken at a forum of ours for a number of years. This is the first time, and we are very, very fortunate to have Dr. Michael Perrenny.
Thank you. But you know, it gets embarrassing when the applause you get before you speak are longer than the applause you get after you speak. I'm going to talk about U.S. globalism. I'm one of those people who believes that U.S. foreign policy is not stupid or confused, but it's very rational and it's very consistent. The history of U.S. policy, especially after World War II, but even before, is a history of bloody, repressive interventions. Most Americans would be shocked to hear about this. Most Americans believe that the United States is a force for good and virtue and democracy in the world. The gap, the difference between what Americans believe that U.S. leaders are doing in the world and what these U.S. leaders have actually been doing is one of the great propaganda achievements of the last century. The truth of the matter is, and it's not the United States. I may sometimes lapse and say the United States. Every time I say United States, I don't mean the United States, because we're the United States. I mean U.S. leaders. U.S. leaders profess a dedication to democracy, yet over the last 50 years, the U.S. national security state has been a key force in overthrowing reformist democratic governments in Guatemala, in Guyana, in the Dominican Republic, in Brazil, Chile, Uruguay, Syria, Indonesia under Sukarno, Greece twice, Argentina twice, Haiti, Bolivia, and other countries. It's a very incomplete list. Those are the ones I wrote down on the plane, just come to my head. And replace them in each case with pro-capitalist military regimes that open up their markets, resources, and cheap labor. By cheap labor, I mean unorganized labor. I mean underpaid labor. I mean labor that's intimidated by goon squads and death squads. Open them up to U.S. corporate investors on terms that are completely favorable to the investors. U.S. has been active in covert actions and proxy mercenary wars against popular revolutionary governments in Cuba, Angola, Mozambique, Ethiopia, Portugal, South Yemen, Nicaragua, Cambodia, East Timor, Western Sahara, and elsewhere. Another incomplete list. Against reformist governments in Egypt, Lebanon, Peru, Iran under Mossadegh, Syria, Zaire, Jamaica, the Fiji Islands, Afghanistan. U.S. forces with direct aggression and invasion have attacked just in recent years, in the last few decades, Vietnam, the Dominican Republic, North Korea, Laos, either with direct total invasion or aerial attack, or both, North Korea, Laos, Cambodia, Yugoslavia, Lebanon, Grenada, Panama, Libya, Iraq twice, Somalia. Estimated 10,000 people killed in Somalia. You didn't hear about that 10,000, did you, when they did Black Hawk Down and they showed those 28 American boys killed, 28 who should have never been there, and we support our troops, we want to take them and bring them home. That's the real support. You saw that, all that fighting and all that. They didn't tell you that 10,000 Somalians were killed by U.S. jets and missiles and whatever else. Hundreds of thousands have been killed in Iraq. Tens of thousands died every week, all through the 12 years of sanctions. I visited Iraq in 99. When I was there, the bombings didn't start again. The bombings never stopped. The bombings were going on all through those 12 years, two, three times a week. Somebody were getting killed. In the short 7 days I was in Iraq in November 2000, a school was hit and four students were badly injured and two teachers were killed just in the week I was there by American bombs. And that stuff kept going on. 3 million were killed in Vietnam. 300,000 Vietnamese are still missing in action. We talk about our missing in action in Vietnam, which, what, 1,200 now? Where are they? Where could they be? They have 300,000 missing, blown to pieces, gone, whatever. 500,000 in Laos were killed. And that's not the only victims. There's the victims who survived. There's the victims with shattered bodies, with shattered spirits and minds. There are the victims who lost everything, who spent a lifetime trying to recover from that. 300,000 killed in East Timor by that deranged murder machine known as the Indonesian Army, trained, equipped, paid, and advised by the Pentagon, the CIA, and the U.S. National Security State. 80,000 killed in El Salvador. Finally acknowledged, finally, in the New York Times acknowledged, 30 years later, acknowledged that 205,000 were killed in Guatemala. And the president, our peerless leader of that time, slimebag Bill Clinton, goes down and says, I apologize. Oh, okay, well, he apologized. That makes it all okay now. 205,000 killed by death squads, by extermination programs, 600 Mayan villages. 600 of these villages, every man, woman, and child in them killed by Rios Montt, General Rios Montt, protege of the School of the Americas, protege of the CIA. Over 1 million people killed in Mozambique. We never heard a word about this in the media because it was a CIA war. Over 2 million killed in Angola in a war that went on for 30 years, which didn't have to go on at all, except that UNITA was equipped and financed by the U.S. All through the Middle East, popular movements, workers' movements, unions, student movements, farmer collectives, all of them destroyed, shattered, battered down. In Turkey, in Iraq, Iran, Egypt, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon. Saudi Arabia, that obscenely filthy, rich, corrupt family wouldn't last 3 weeks if they didn't have U.S. guns behind them. The people of Saudi Arabia are ready to get rid of them. And we could go on. 21 countries in Africa that have had enormous amounts of U.S. arms, bribes, all of this, to put in the most retrograde, repressive, and corrupt rulers to destroy every popular movement, every democratic movement that emerges. These people are perfectly capable of democracy. These people are perfectly capable of viable production. These people are perfectly capable of organizing their markets and their labor. They're perfectly capable. They aren't allowed to do it. Because of this kind of destruction. The destruction of the economic infrastructure, the impoverishment of the people, the destruction of their future. You kill the future of a nation too. And anyone who dares to oppose it or question it is called a rogue state. Now, there's no rogue state. There's no terrorist movement. There's no axis of evil. There's no communist state that has this kind of record. There's no communist red blood menace, you know, say what you want, Stalinist state, that has anything like this record of aggression and destruction and murder and violation of international law. That just isn't. And I say the American people don't know it. All of this, by the way, is a matter of public record. It's not like I got some secret documents that just came into my hands that no one else has seen. It's all a matter of public record, but of course, there's some parts of the public record that get blasted across the media, and there are other parts of it that are thoroughly suppressed. Now, it's not enough to bemoan or denounce this. We also have to explain it. We have to explain why. Why is this happening? We will not convince our compatriots of the wrongful nature of this kind of policy unless we discuss the real intent and interest behind such policy. As long as they believe that this is being done to protect them from some threats out there, they will go along with it. They don't care if their leaders are rough. They don't care if their leaders violate international law. They want them to violate international law. They want them to act like thugs and gangsters. They want them to be tough and brutal and total and decisive. That's called strong leadership. That's called strong defense. When they are afraid, and that is what our leadership has done, is to conjure up fears that there's people out there going to get us. For a long time, it was the communist menace. The communists are going to get you. This is all because of communists. We have to do this. We have to support dictators because we've got to stop those communists. But a lot of these interventions came way before communism, and a lot more of them are happening more frequently, more bloodily, after communism. So it wasn't communism. That was one of the excuses. That was one of the bugaboos that they raised up. That was one of the fears they conjured up so that people will rally around the flag and will do what the leaders want. And we've got to speak to that fear and say, you have a false fear. There are things you really should be afraid of and you're not afraid of it, like poisoning the environment, like going and killing all these people, like putting your democracy at risk, like having your public treasure devoured by a rapacious military and a rapacious corporate America. Those are real things you should fear and stop fearing some little country. One year it's Noriega, the next year it's Milosevic, the next year it's Gaddafi, the next year it's the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, the next year Saddam Hussein. Do you remember Gaddafi? I remember 1980s. In the 1980s, I was going around lecturing, and suddenly I hear people saying to me, Gaddafi, Gaddafi. Everybody was Gaddafi-ing. Gaddafi. What about Gaddafi? Gaddafi, Gaddafi, Gaddafi going to get your mama, Gaddafi. Where's Gaddafi? I said, what Gaddafi, what? 2 months ago, you couldn't have found Libya on the map. Today, you're convinced that this guy, head of a country of 3 million people, with an army of 50,000, about the size of the LAPD, is a mortal threat to the safety of the United States of America, to the national security. And what was Gaddafi's real sin? I'll tell you what his real sin was, because that policy wasn't stupid when they targeted Gaddafi, and their animosity toward him is a very legitimate one. Here's what Gaddafi did. Gaddafi took a country that had a social structure like Saudi Arabia, where a few obscenely rich families ran the whole thing, got all the money from the oil, and the mass of people were poor. And what he did is he kicked those families out, he and his colonel's rebellion, and he started afforestation program. He planted millions of trees. He started health programs, education, school programs. For the first time in the history, the ordinary Libyans could go to school. That's what he was doing, and he nationalized the oil industry, and he took the earnings from the oil industry. He still sold it to the Western markets. What are they going to do with it? They can't drink it, they can't eat it. Sure, they are more than happy to sell it to the West, but they were getting the cut on it, and that money is what he used, and he gave that back to the people, and that's not what they like. Because the difference between the haves and the have-nots, I mean, the truth is, in the conflict between the haves and the have-nots, the haves are really the have-it-alls. They want it all, and they don't want to give a little bit here and a little there. The U.S. government, since World War II, has given away some $300 billion in military aid. Just think what $300 billion. That could solve all the budgetary crises of all the states in the Union right now. Just that amount. Aid to train, equip, and subsidize some 2.5 million troops and internal security forces in more than 80 countries. Not to defend these nations from outside invasion, but to protect ruling oligarchs and multinational corporate investors from the dangers of domestic anti-capitalist insurgency. How do we know that's true? Well, by observing, for instance, that with very few exceptions, there's no evidence that these various regimes have ever been threatened by attack from neighboring countries. So why are they building up these military forces? Why are they building up these security and police and paramilitary forces? It's not to make war or defend themselves from another country that's going to make war on them. It's to make war on their own people, to make war on their own working people. That's why. To protect those countries.